This is the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm David Salkeld, and I'm sitting in for Tony this week. The race for the White House on the GOP side continues to be a roller coaster. Just a few days ago, Senator Ted Cruz took the majority of the delegates in the all-important state of Wisconsin. Although he still trails frontrunner Donald Trump in the total delegate count, this race seems to be turning. Many believe we are headed towards a contested convention. However, this race still has a long way to go, with many states still in play. What can we expect moving forward? The founder of Rasmussen Reports and president of STIRC, Scott Rasmussen, joined Tony earlier this week with that answer.
All right, let me preface this first interview once again with this disclaimer. Washington Watch and our related affiliates do not support or oppose candidates for president or any office. Any endorsements made are strictly in a personal capacity and do not represent the Washington Watch program or our affiliates. All right, after last night's decisive victory in Wisconsin for Ted Cruz, most see the GOP contest not being decided until the candidates and delegates show up in Cleveland, Ohio in July. Joining me now to help us do the math and provide analysis on the GOP race is the founder of Rasmussen Reports and the president of STIRC, Scott Rasmussen. Scott, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you again.
What do you make of last night's victory for Ted Cruz in Wisconsin? What does that do for the GOP contest?
Well, the first thing is it was a very significant victory in that it looks like, at least in Wisconsin, Ted Cruz consolidated the support of all the people that do not want Donald Trump as their nominee. Now, part of that may be because Scott Walker is such a popular figure in Wisconsin Republican circles. He gave a strong endorsement. And that may also provide a model for other Republican leaders to be aware of, that when leaders stand up opposed to Donald Trump, they're getting some support. So that's the first thing. The second is, there is no way that anybody is going to go to Cleveland with 1,237 pledged delegates. There will be a chance for lots of things to happen, but I expect the nominee will be either Ted Cruz or Donald Trump, because nobody else will have the legitimacy going forward to be considered.
And the Republicans have to be very careful about that, because it's already going to be the fact that we're having a contested convention, which we really haven't seen since Gerald Ford and Ronald Reagan. They're going to have to be very careful, because everybody's going to be watching and the rules are going to be very important. And it would be very hard to explain why someone who was not in the top vote getting of delegates would come away with the nomination.
That's correct. And let's be clear, it doesn't mean necessarily the person who has the most pledged delegates will actually have to get the nomination. There are going to be 300 or 400 unbound delegates, either because their states elected them without a preference or because they were initially for some other candidate. That's a bigger pool of delegates than you can win in any state. Donald Trump and Ted Cruz are going to be competing for them. It is possible that either of those men could win a first ballot victory by winning over those delegates. Right now, Ted Cruz is doing a much better job. In North Dakota last week, they selected delegates. Out of 28 delegates, only one supported Donald Trump. This is a contest to watch. It's not getting the media coverage, but it's a very important part of the process.
The unbound delegates, the delegates that could become free agents after the first round, are those kind of like the super delegates that are unpredictable within the Democratic ranks?
Not at all. The super delegates on the Democratic side are a bunch of office holders who are guaranteed their slot, and their specific purpose is to make sure the establishment of the Democratic Party stays in control. On the Republican side, a number of states, five states, elect their delegates specifically as free agents. They are not bound by a presidential preference. On top of that, in the state of Pennsylvania, 54 of the 71 delegates are elected directly. They're elected as a delegate, not as a representative of a campaign. And then on top of that, you do have some that were, say, a Marco Rubio delegate who will eventually be put into the unbound pool. So these are people who were elected through the normal process, but they do not have a stated preference.
So in essence, the Republican Party is more Democratic than the Democratic Party when it comes to the delegates.
That's a great way to put it. And I think it's a really important distinction, because these delegates, in Colorado, for example, they're picking delegates through an ongoing process. These were the rules set up ahead of time. They are selected through a process at the state level. And the Cruz campaign has been better organized to attract these delegates than the Trump campaign. And I suspect what that means as we move forward is you'll start to see the Cruz campaign close the gap on the delegate count, because they're winning so many of these other delegates.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, my guest, Scott Rasmussen. Scott, you made reference to this. Ted Cruz, good organization across the country. You know, it's reflected, especially in caucuses, where he wins really hands down. For Donald Trump to be able, does that give him an advantage into the convention, that he has this network and the grassroots? And is there time for Donald Trump to make up for his lack of that infrastructure?
Well, it certainly gives Ted Cruz an advantage. And in fact, I would say right now that if Donald Trump is unable to win on the first ballot, Ted Cruz is almost certain to win on the second ballot. Trump campaign has hired a veteran, Paul Manafort, to head up their delegate process. I'm not sure that he has enough time to really do all they need to do. But I think there's something else that we're missing here, and that goes back to the last time there was a contested convention. Ronald Reagan lost. He fought all the way to the end. He won states down the stretch. And he, at the end of the day, despite all the bitterness between he and his campaign and the Ford campaign, he gave a very gracious concession speech. He worked hard for Gerald Ford in the fall campaign. And Ronald Reagan, after that election, became one of the leaders of the Republican Party and was elected president 4 years later. Ted Cruz and Donald Trump will both have a lot of incentive to support the other at the end of this convention. And hard as it is to believe today, I think there will be a really good opportunity for the Republican Party to be united after the convention, and partly because it's in the incentive or the interest of those guys to do so, partly because all Republicans will want to beat Hillary Clinton.
Of course, that takes the ability to look beyond oneself and look to the benefit of the nation and the party. Another example of that would be the next election, when Ronald Reagan actually won a bitter contest with George Bush, but he chose George Bush as his running mate.
Right. And let me be clear, I am not actually suggesting that this requires either Donald Trump or Ted Cruz to look beyond themselves. I am saying it will be in their own best interest to do so. Mm-hmm. For example, if Ted Cruz were to go into the convention with a lot of unpledged delegates and win the nomination, Donald Trump would have some incentives for his own brand, for his own influence on the next president, to support Ted Cruz. And the reverse would also be true.
All right. Got to leave it there, Scott. Thanks so much for joining us, and drive safely on that turnpike.
Thank you, Tony.
You can find out more about Scott Rasmussen when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we return, Senator Tom Cotton joins us to talk about a potential new threat from Russia. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch.
Are you prepared to stand for real change? Mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 9th through 11th in Washington, D.C. Join thousands of like-minded Americans who envision a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers at the Values Voter Summit have included Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Governor Mike Huckabee, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Dr. Ben Carson, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, Ollie North, Mark Levin, and many others. In addition, there will be ample opportunity to network and meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues like religious liberty, the sanctity of life, natural marriage, national security, government overreach, and more. On September 9th through 11th, stand with us and fight for the renewal of this great nation. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information and to watch last year's event. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld, and while Tony is taking some time off this weekend, we're sharing a couple of the best interviews from Washington Watch Live from this past week. We discussed earlier this week the reality that Russia, in spite of the 2010 New START arms treaty, has grown their nuclear warhead stockpile by 153 over the past year. In that same period, the U.S. has shrunk our nuclear warhead stockpile by 57. Not only does this violate the treaty, which requires the United States and Russia to reduce their arsenal of deployed strategic warheads to 1,550 by February of 2018, they're not slowing down. Russia's defense ministry has announced that they're actually building new missiles that will be able to carry multiple nuclear warheads. What is the United States doing about this? Member of both the Senate Intelligence Committee and Armed Services Committee, Arkansas Senator and combat veteran Tom Cotton joined Tony on Wednesday.
Let me welcome to the program the senator from the state of Arkansas, Senator Tom Cotton. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, it's great to be on with you again.
Hey, thanks for joining us. I ended up having a conversation with myself about this, but I want to ask you this question. As we look at what's happening in Russia, last month, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs said that Russia poses the greatest threat to the United States. We see them moving in the opposite direction that they should be going when it comes to the New START treaty that the Obama administration negotiated with them in 2010. Are we looking at the return of what Ronald Reagan called the evil empire?
Well, Tony, unfortunately, Russia has gotten much more dangerous over the last 7 years under President Obama, but really over the last 16 years since Vladimir Putin's rise to power. Russia, in a way, is the number one threat we face and always will be, because Russia alone has the nuclear arsenal to destroy the United States, to perhaps eliminate the human race if it came to that nuclear war. That's one reason why it's so important that, as Reagan did, we draw firm lines with Russian aggression, whether that's Russian aggression in Georgia in 2008, in Ukraine in 2014, or in the Middle East, in Syria, in 2015 and 2016. And as you mentioned about the New START treaty, that was a one-sided treaty that favored Russia's development of new nuclear weapons against the United States, which had to draw down our arsenal. And just last week in the latest data exchange, we learned that, strangely, they have a larger number of warheads now, not to mention the much larger arsenal of tactical nuclear weapons they have. This is a very troubling development for the United States, and therefore a troubling development for the whole world.
When you look at this and you say a one-sided agreement negotiated with Russia by the United States, we're drawing down, they're building up, this sounds like a pattern. I mean, it's also what we're seeing in Iran.
We saw it with Cuba as well. No, it is a pattern, Tony, that the president, especially, after the interview that Jeff Goldberg did with him in the Atlantic Monthly recently, clearly thinks that the United States foreign policy over the last several decades has not served United States interests, that we've got too many allies around the world, that they're free riders that tend to just draw us into problems, and that the enemies we have, enemies like Iran, are in part, maybe in large part, of our own making. And greater understanding, greater concessions, and conciliation with those enemies would help protect U.S. interests. I would think 7 years of reality would dissuade the president from these views. I mean, extending a hand to Iran has only made them more aggressive throughout the Middle East and got them a one-sided nuclear deal. The so-called Russian reset has done nothing to reset relations with Vladimir Putin, except for resetting them on his own terms. And then, as I mentioned, in Cuba, it's probably the least strategically consequential decision because of that nation's small, impoverished status. But it's even more one-sided than any other policy the president has had. He consistently has coddled and appeased our adversaries and treated our allies with contempt and disdain.
So, Senator Cotton, with that in mind, I mean, we live in a very dangerous world. when you consider that, as you said, Russia, because of their capacity, is our greatest threat, but you look at the Middle East, you look at China, look at North Korea, the next president who comes into the Oval Office is going to walk in on day one with a very difficult situation staring them right in the face.
That's true, Tony. And the next president is going to have some of the most diverse, complex, and challenging security threats that the United States has faced, not just since the end of the Cold War, but since the end of World War II. And you have the rest of the world, most of which is friendly towards the United States, to greater or lesser degrees, is looking for a United States that will once again lead in the world, that will help provide a framework for international security as we have for 70 years. 70 pretty good years, I would have to add. 70 years in which we have not had an outbreak of great power war, as we did twice in the first half of the 20th century and innumerable times before that. In fact, I was visiting recently with the head of state of one of our NATO allies, a small country, but a critical country that does unique things for us no other country could do in the world. And we asked the head of state what more that we should tell our colleagues back in Washington, and that head of state said, "You need a new U.S. president who understands the need for leadership in the world." That's pretty stark.
Well, that sums it up. I mean, that's exactly what's needed. Senator, I want to thank you for taking time to join us this afternoon. I want to ask you one final question. As I know you serve on the Armed Services Committee in the Senate, on the Senate Intelligence Committee, you're also a combat veteran in the United States Army. So I know you're very plugged in and concerned about our nation's military. What's going to have to happen for us to rebuild our military and bring it to a point where it has the strength to secure our peace?
The military needs a substantial budget increase, Tony. You can dig down in the numbers and get exact figures, but I think we're looking on an order of magnitude of about $100 billion more, hopefully, under a new administration, an emergency spending bill. And that's going to have to be dedicated towards today's readiness, equipping and training our troops and manning their units, all of which have declined under the Obama administration. It also has to go to modernization of our conventional forces, like our aircraft carrier fleet, or purchasing new or more joint strike fighters, building out new land vehicles for the Army and the Marine Corps, and then finally to modernizing our nuclear arsenal, which is as old as it's ever been. We're going to have to design new nuclear weapons. We need to modernize the missiles that carry them. We're in the process of building a brand new bomber and building new ballistic missile submarines. All three of those things are going to have to happen, and it's going to be a substantial investment of new money. But I don't think there's any better return than for the American taxpayer than investing their military, not only to fight and win our wars, but hopefully to deter them from ever happening in the first place, because our military supremacy is unmatched in the world.
Right, and that was Ronald Reagan's view, peace through strength. But the morale, I mean, we're seeing a low in the morale. We've seen the highest rates of suicide among those who serve in uniform. The social policy that has been thrust upon the military by this administration, which has made this a very complex and troubling situation, is there a way to unwind that and bring back the morale of those who serve?
No, you're certainly right about some of those concerns, Tony. And this goes back as well to the budget crunch our military has faced. If you look at the Army, they've been losing over 10,000 troops per year from their high a few years ago. That's not just bad for our national security, because we might lack adequate troop numbers to deter and, if necessary, fight the next war, which is a problem we had in the early days of the last war. But it's also very bad for morale of our troops. When you're an E7 or you're a major and you're told that there's not enough spots for you, when you get a letter saying you're going to have to retire early and therefore your retirement's going to be a little lower, you're not going to be able to continue to serve out a job in which you take great pride, that's very harmful for our morale. Also harmful for our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, not just today, but for tomorrow as well, because we're losing thousands of years of collective combat experience. And you can always make a new private or a new lieutenant in a few months, but you can't give them the kind of battle-hardened experience that our senior non-commissioned officers and our field grade officers have received over the last 15 years.
That's absolutely right. And I've had that conversation with General Boykin here on my team numerous times. Senator, thanks so much for joining us. As always, appreciate having the conversation.
Great to be on with you, Tony. Thank you very much.
You can find out more about Senator Cotton when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with more from Washington Watch right after this. Don't go away.
The 2016 presidential election is just 9 months away, and FRC Action is here to help prepare you with the Values Voter Presidential Voter Guide. Determining which presidential candidate shares our most cherished values can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. The FRC Action Presidential Voter Guide simplifies the process by compiling the candidate's position on Planned Parenthood funding, the future of natural marriage, religious liberty, and more. Visit frcaction.org/2016 to view the voter guide. Again, that's frcaction.org/2016.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. There are some companies, and even some states out there, that are boycotting conservative states that have had the courage to protect the religious liberties of their citizens. Tony Perkins took to the airwaves this week to share his thoughts on the subject.
PayPal, very much like Angie's List in Indiana back when Mike Pence signed a religious freedom law, and then business jumped on him, and they got cold feet, and they retreated and put up the white flag. And Angie's List was one of the said they're not going to do an expansion in Indianapolis because of it. Well, a lot of conservatives then went after Angie's List, canceled their subscriptions. It was interesting. You don't read about this in the press. They're not going to tell this story. But the CEO of Angie's List, who founded the company, was basically forced out. Because they took a turn south. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen to PayPal. You do as you please. I know there's been, it's just kind of funny watching as we're looking at this. We've been using PayPal at FRC. I personally have used it, but not for much longer. I'm looking at alternatives and how we do that because it's, you know, when you're doing transactions electronically, it is a convenience and it's also a security issue. But, you know, for those of you on the left who have been trolling today, take note, PayPal will not be on our website for much longer as we look for another means to which our constituents can easily make contributions to us. And I personally will be ending my PayPal account too. So those of you who have been, you know, foaming at the mouth on the left today, take it easy. You know, we're gonna be ditching PayPal as PayPal shows their hypocrisy about demanding the right of men to walk into girls' bathrooms in the state of North Carolina. But here's the bigger picture here, folks. And I can speak to this from experience as a legislator who had a very good record with the business community because, quite frankly, I believe in free markets. I believe they're in line with biblical principles. And when you have free markets and you allow business to do what they're supposed to do, make products, deliver services, it's good for the economy and it's good for the environment. It's good for everybody. So, you know, I was supportive of business, of lower government regulation, eliminating a lot of these unnecessary zoning laws, so on and so forth. And that's true with most conservatives. And that has historically been the case. The most reliable votes for free enterprise, bar none, have been full portfolio conservatives, meaning conservatives, people, individuals, elected officials who are conservative on social issues, those that are conservative on fiscal issues, meaning taxes and regulation, and those on foreign policy. All right, that's a full portfolio conservative. Those have been the most reliable and consistent supporters for the business community. Now, all of a sudden, the business community, big business, has been hijacked. And I wouldn't say it's necessarily involuntarily. Maybe, I don't know, maybe some of the Stockholm syndrome, I don't know. But I wouldn't necessarily say they're being held hostage by the LGBT community, but they're certainly being used as puppets. But I don't think they've thought through this. Because who's going to come to their defense to help, get those favorable tax environments, which is why you see businesses going to North Carolina, you see them going to Mississippi, you see them going to Louisiana, you see them going to Texas. Why aren't businesses flocking to California? It's not just because they have bad social policy, it's because they have crazy tax policy. Why aren't they flocking to New York? Why aren't they flocking to Vermont? Because they have environments that are hostile to business, because they have this socialistic mindset. And it's reflected. It's reflected across the board. So big business attacking the very conservatives and conservative ideals that has fostered the environment that has allowed them to prosper. As the Lieutenant Governor, Dan Forrest, who's been on the program before, said, I think yesterday, when PayPal and others threatened to leave and we're gonna pack up and go home, he said, okay, bye. But good for them. I mean, someone else will come and fill the space, as we talked about in Houston. They're seeing massive expansion of office space and retail space because people are flocking there because of the favorable environment for business. Look, business will go to where it is most favorable, not where they have social policy that is leftist in its orientation, because with that comes a leftist socialist economic policy, which is not good for business. So go ahead, big business. Go ahead. You know, make your alliance with the left. And when you're looking for help to get the tax, favorable tax policies and those zoning ordinances, that regulation eliminated, I don't think you're going to find it with your new teammates.
Well, you can find out more about today's guests when you go to tonyperkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld. Thank you to you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234.